from the Packers TV network. Going end zone to end zone with the green and gold every week. This is Packers Live.
And welcome to Packers Live, our second show, but unfortunately our first show following a loss. I'm Lance Allen with the voice of the Packers, Wayne Larrivee. And Wayne, you were at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and I can't imagine it felt much better.
You're not going to ask me about the stadium?
I mean, everybody's asking me about the stadium.
How loud was it, Wayne?
It was big. It was big, and the video board above was incredible. But, yeah, for the Packers, unfortunately, it started to look early on a lot like the NFC Championship game.
And that was unfortunate. Okay, going into it, I thought Brian Bulaga likely wouldn't play. He didn't practice all week, but I thought David Bakhtiari has a chance to go, and they can't play without both starting tackles, can they, Wayne? They did.
They did, yeah. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers took some pretty big shots here. He was sacked three times in that first half of play, and then this sack right here forced a backward pass. And, again, Vic Beasley had kind of a field day on that particular play. I thought the young tackles did their best, but, again, they're not experienced. And in the case of Justin, they move him out there, McCray, and he's playing tackle where he's been a guard all summer.
Yeah, first time he'd played tackle in 3 years, Wayne, and then Kyle Murphy on the right side switching over to the left side, only his second career start, first time on the left side. So they did okay. You couldn't expect a lot.
You know, the greats in Pro Football Focus, Jahri Evans had an outstanding ball game in terms of pass blocking, did not allow a pressure or a sack in that ball game. And Lane Taylor, left guard, had a pretty good, solid pass blocking grade, for the Packers. So the interior was okay, but we knew they were going to be stressed on the outside on that offensive line. And Lance, it did affect the plays they could call and the offense they could run.
No doubt about it. You got to tailor it back and dial it back a little bit. Okay, Wayne, first drive by the Falcons, 86 yards, 9 plays. They didn't have an answer for Julio Jones. It looked like different verse, same as the first, and later they had a dominant 87-yard drive. So this is on the defense a little bit.
Yeah, 9 plays, 86 yards. I said on the air it looked a little too easy. They hit Julio for 19 yards and 22 on deep crossing patterns and then finished off the drive. And their two running backs out of the backfield are outstanding. And I thought Mohamed Sanu had a very dominant game in that first half as well, in addition to Jones.
All right, so still only down 10 at the half. And you could get within maybe 7 or 3 at that point, Wayne, and then just a kind of a train wreck of events. A pick play wiping out a 40-plus yard gain to Randall Cobb when you're backed up in your own end zone or near that. A rare Rodgers interception, and then 7 points before the half to fall down by 17.
Yeah, and all this happening right before halftime. And that offensive pass interference play, Larry McCarron will detail it coming up for us in his chalk talk. But you take a look at those plays right there, and that really made the difference. Now, when Rodgers took that shot downfield, I thought, well, there must be a flag somewhere. He wouldn't make a throw like that unless he had a flag coming his way. But, in fact, he did not. He was just trying to get it downfield, just trying to get something deep because everything had been underneath, and Atlanta was creeping up into those short and medium passing zones.
Just so unusual to see him make a mistake like that. All right. Beyond the tackles that didn't play, the litany of other injuries during the game, you lose Jordy Nelson and Mike Daniels very early in this contest, Wayne. The very effective Randall Cobb, you lose him later on, plus Devon House and Kentrell Bryce from the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, they were, you know, again, the injury list was resembling what it was last January in the NFC Championship game. Early in the ballgame, you lose Daniels, your best defensive player. You lose Jordy Nelson, your best receiver. That has impact. There's that next man up stuff. There's a reason the next man up isn't the man, okay?
And you probably need a lot of replacements because that's a fast track down there against a fast team. All right. Aaron Rodgers becoming the 11th member of the 300 touchdown club. 2 TD passes against the Falcons. Number 300, not his most exciting touchdown throw ever, Wayne, but a great accomplishment. Fastest ever.
It would be so much more stylish if the pass play he hit to, the 33-yard pass play.
Right.
You know, that would have been, but this was a little shovel pass. It's great. And congratulations to Aaron Rodgers. He's the 11th quarterback in NFL history to pass for 300 touchdown passes. He's the only quarterback in NFL history to do it and throw for fewer than 100 interceptions, and he's the fastest to that mark.
And how about only 73 interceptions? Everybody else on that 300 club, way way above triple digits. Unbelievable how efficient he is with the ball
as well. Yeah, no question about it. It's been a hallmark of his career.
All right, when we come back, Larry McCarron has Chalk Talk this week. The Rock telling us what was really happening on those two offensive interference calls against the Pack. Stay with us.
Packers Live is sponsored by Johnsonville, Mills Fleet Farm, Spectrum, and Cooper Tires.
Welcome back to Packers Live. The pick play. Every offense has them. Every team uses them. How well you disguise them usually determines whether you get penalized. Larry McCarron examines two big offensive interference calls against the Packers in our Chalk Talk.
Not one, but two offensive pass interference penalties? Really? Let's take a look. And I'll bet your salary on the first, the Packers were actually faking a screen to Martellus Bennett. Key players to watch, Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison. Because at the snap of the ball, they come off the line of scrimmage, not as guys running routes, but as blockers. Look at them stalk those defenders. And here comes Marty, ready to be the receiver on the screen. Now the key defender is across from Cobb, Brian Poole, the Falcons nickelback. And he's been watching tape. And he knows the Packers run lots of screens and their wide receivers block on lots of screens. So he's thinking screen, and he's going to get in the thick of it. Watch him. He comes flying up, and he actually gets in Bennett's way. It's not vice versa. He actually initiates the contact. Meantime, while Poole is here thinking pick six or something like that, Randall Cobb, who he should be guarding, is running downfield wide open, and this thing is going to go for 36 yards. Would have been the Packers' biggest gainer of the day. But as you know, there's the flag, and down the drain that play goes. Now let's look at the other offensive pass interference penalty. And this play involves Cobb and Allison. And Allison basically is going to come down here and get in Poole's way. But the thing to notice, when they talk about pick plays and so forth, Allison never really makes contact or significant contact. He's already changing directions before there's a big bang or a big pick. He's changing directions. And watch this. Poole's got a hold of him. Look at that. He's got a hold of him. Defensive holding, they call it sometimes. Not this time. And once again, a real nice looking Packer play is going for naught. This offensive pass interference stuff, I guess it depends on how you look at it. And here's how Mike McCarthy looks at it.
The first one was ridiculous. It's not even a rub play. It was a double move play. So I was trying to get clarity on it. Didn't get any clarity on it. The one down on the goal line, that's a very common play. Been ran in this league for a long time. It's a judgment call, so I don't really have an issue with the second one. But the first one, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Great stuff as always from Larry. And I tell you what, Wayne, I try not to be a total homer, but that pick play thing, I don't think it was a pick play at all.
Well, because first off, the contact happened in the zone close to the line of scrimmage where it is legal to make contact there. But secondly, that really changed the ball game. That took that play away from the Packers. The next play, Aaron throws the interception. A couple of plays later, Atlanta is leading now 24-7 at halftime instead of 17-7.
Definitely took the air out of their sails. All right, whether you agree with the calls or not, those picks are always a subject to the official's judgment. Tom Silverstein joins us next for the roundtable. Stick around for that. It's Stein time. All right, back for the roundtable segment with Tom Silverstein of JS Online. Last week, Wayne, he wouldn't even have my back in a fight, so I think we're going to really throw down this time. It's going to get crazy around here.
All right, Tom, what did Sunday night prove? Is Atlanta the clear-cut number one team in the NFC?
I would say they are, based on what you saw from Dallas getting blown out, the Packers not being able to stand in with them. But let's remember, it's week two. And so much changes by nobody's playing their best until week 12, maybe. And that's when you start to judge where teams are at. I don't think you judge New England on the loss that they had to Kansas City. You know, you'll judge them in week 10. And I think the same is true for the Packers. But there are things we can talk about for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think there's still a gap between the Falcons and the Packers. Like, maybe the Packers are the second best team in the NFC right now, and things change over a year. But I think you're right in the sense that right now they've got a gap to catch.
And you know, you mentioned Seattle. I mean, they barely score a touchdown against the 49ers and eking out a win there. So, you know, that's something. But, you know, I've often said this, Tom, the thing I've learned over the years, especially recent years, is that if you're the best team in September and October, I guarantee you will not be the best team come January when you need to be.
More than likely. More than likely that's the case. We've seen the Packers, I think it was 15, they got off to that 6-0 start, and they never really followed through on that.
And 4-6 year, down the stretch.
Yeah, right. And last year they started off terrible and they got hot. So I don't know which way they're going to go. Mm-hmm. I think they're somewhere in between the Seattle and the Atlanta game, but I think there's a lot of things you can learn from that Atlanta game, and I think there's some things I took out of it that definitely will be things to look at in the future.
Can you elaborate on some of that?
I think number one is you saw Dom Capers try to cover Julio Jones in man-to-man a little bit more. And there, I think he said, let's find out whether these guys can cover. Let's get some information. Now, you know, of course he wants to win the game. Right. But I think you had Randall, you had Rollins coming off decent games. Give him a chance.
Absolutely.
And I think for the most part they failed. I think other than Kevin King, they failed. Now you have that information, and what do you do with it? And what do you do going forward with how you use those guys?
Let's call this the leap to conclusions segment. Last week we were talking about how much better the defense was.
Yeah,
so
right.
Now we can throw out the question, is this defense really any better than it was last year because they gave up the big yardage in this contest?
You know, we did say last week, we did say that the proof would be in the pudding against the best offense in the NFC Sunday night in Atlanta. And unfortunately, you know, the pudding wasn't very tasteful for those of us who follow the Packers. But I agree with all that Tom said. It's way too early to draw conclusions. What do we know about the Packers? I think they're improved. I think they're a faster team. They looked faster out there. Now, the result wasn't much different in the first half of that game Sunday night. But I think the Packers have more capability. And some young guys are going to start breaking through. Dom Capers said so tonight.
That's the number one thing that I came away with was Kevin King and Josh Jones have to be on the field. You drafted those guys because they have speed, and you've got to have them on the field. They're going to make mistakes, but right now, you've seen, you know what Demaryius Randle, you know what Quentin Rollins, you know what Devon House give you.
Yep.
Now find out what these guys can do.
Because
Kevin
dimension.
King has had two straight good games.
And no doubt about it. And, you know, everybody jumped on the T.J. Watt bandwagon the first week with the two sacks and the interception, whatever. But I think you hit on a great point, Spoon, that Kevin King, he was thrown at, what, four times during the game and defended all four of those passes. Mm-hmm. He probably needs to see more playing time.
I think. And he played okay in Seattle, too, the few snaps that he got as well. Josh Jones is a guy that I want to see them play more, especially in the place where Burnett is, because I think he's better against the run than Burnett is. He's a strong, imposing guy. Now, he's going to get, you know, he's not going to make all the intelligent plays that Burnett does because he's a rookie. But I really think their top three picks, and I think Montrevious Adams is the X factor when he comes back.
Right.
Those are three guys that they added because of athletic ability, and they have to get them on the field.
So the beginning of the year, most people said, hey, 1-1, are you okay with it? Yeah, probably. But did this loss damage their home playoff hopes in the NFC, or is this kind of what you thought that they would be at this point?
Well, it definitely does damage it because if it comes down to a tie with Atlanta, they got to get Atlanta on their own turf. It's sort of like Dallas when they used to go there and play.
Or even the Niners when they kind of had the Packers number.
Yeah,
there, so
I mean, they have to get them at home on grass. That's your best bet at chance of beating
Atlanta. But it's way too early to concede home field
advantage. Right. No doubt about it. No doubt
about it. We're months away from that.
Yeah.
And what do you guys think about two games in 11 days, not heavyweights in the Bengals and Bears, but both at home? Is it an easy 3-1? Can we just kind of, we can talk about more than one game at a time. The game that the guys take it one game at a time, but what do you guys think?
Critical they take care of business, Tom. Yeah. I mean, 3-1 start is fine. That's fine. Then you're in the race. You're off to a good start. lose one of those two games, and I think you're really now you're doing what they've been doing on occasion, and that's swimming upstream the rest of the season.
Yeah, you can't lose to Cincinnati at home.
No.
Not after what we've seen from Cincinnati the first 2 weeks. And the Bears are beat up. You can't lose to them either. Even though I think they're a greatly improved team, you cannot lose to them
at home.
So these are must wins, but they're very winnable games.
All right, too. Tom, thanks for the time this week. And up next in our Packers Extra feature, as a kid playing in the NFL, that was not the plan for Devon House. His story is next on Packers Live.
Packers Live is sponsored by Menards, UW Health, and Toyota.
Welcome back on Packers Live. Devon House has found his way back to the Packers after a couple of seasons in Jacksonville. But growing up, it took a while for House to find his way to football at all.
Packers Extra is presented by Johnsonville and Mills Fleet Farm.
Love baseball. I did little youth football when I was young, but no passion there. Didn't like the contact. Rather play soccer instead. Then when I get to high school, my dad said, "All right, if you don't want to play, don't play." It's okay, sweet. So I did travel ball year round, and then the reason why I played football my junior year was because my brother, someone I looked up to a lot, it was his senior year, and wanted to play ball with him. I started opposite side corner with my brother, and he started the other side, so it was sweet playing with him. But I mean, a lot of my baseball friends played football, and they knew I can play. Just passion wasn't there. I would say when I got a senior in high school, then I was like, "Oh, it's actually pretty good at this."
And when we were talking off camera, the Packers kind of seem to like guys that play other sports, like linemen that were wrestlers and things like that, a variety.
And isn't it amazing how kids are specializing so early in sports nowadays, when really play, if you're in high school and you're grade school, play all the sports. It'll benefit you down the road, and they do like that aspect.
I'm not athletic. I would have played anything that they would have had me do, Wade. I tell you what. All right, coming up, the Bengals are coming to town. You're watching Packers Live. We're going to talk about Cincy next. And welcome back. The Cincinnati Bengals limping into Lambeau Field 0-2. They have yet to score a touchdown. Only scored 9 points, Wayne, in two games.
Two home games.
Oh, that's dreadful. They need a ticket refund. They fired offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi after Thursday night's loss to Houston. Andy Dalton and company looking to find something during this mini bye for Sunday's game against the Packers. Wayne, what do you see out of Cincinnati?
I will say this. They played two excellent AFC defenses. Baltimore week one, Houston week two on a short week, and they didn't look good doing it, but they've got talent. This Cincinnati team, Lance, has talent. You look at Andy Dalton. A.J. Green is kind of a downfield Julio Jones kind of guy. John Ross is on this team, and he comes out of the draft as a first-round draft choice, ran the fastest 40 ever in the combine. And the other guy they have is a guy by the name of Joe Mixon, controversial pick because of a domestic incident early in his Oklahoma career, but he might be the best rookie running back in the NFL at season's end.
You know, Kevin Zeitler, who's from the Milwaukee area, told me that Geno Atkins in practice is unblockable, and he's another guy, a mountain of a man on the defensive line, Wayne, they've
got
to worry about.
They've got studs on that defensive line, Lance. Carlos Dunlap, you mentioned Geno Atkins. Mm-hmm. They've got some good people on defense. The thing that bothers me, they've gone 25 possessions without scoring a touchdown. So what does that tell you?
And the new coordinator, you don't have as much tape on him, so you don't know. But that's part of their problem right there is just repeated mistakes over and over and over, Wayne.
Yeah, they've had a lot of turnover-type situations. And, again, they play two great defenses, but, hey, they're off to a terrible start. You Packers have to get out in front of this team early and keep them down.
All right, for the voice of the Packers, Wayne Larrivee, I'm Lance Allen. Thanks for watching Packers Live this week. We will certainly talk to you about the Cincinnati Bengals and break that one down next week. Thanks for watching, everyone.